Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Justin Blake, Executive Director of the Edelman Trust Institute, Edelman's think tank for advancing the study and measurement of trust in institutions. Welcome to a three-part series of the show where we will be recording on the ground from the 2024 annual meeting of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Over the next few days, we will be speaking with key figures and experts about this year's forum and gather their insights on our annual 2024 Trust Barometer. I'm joined today by Ina Fried, Chief Technology Correspondent at Axios and co-author of the Axios AI Plus newsletter. Ina has been reporting on technology for the past 20 years. She has closely followed the evolution of artificial intelligence tools and their integration into society. Ina, welcome to the Trustmakers.
Hey, Justin. Great to be here.
Great to have you. What are you looking forward to this week?
I'm looking forward to a much more sophisticated conversation on AI than we had a year ago. AI was the talk of Davos last year. That's what we wrote. That's what everyone wrote. And it was true, but it was a very superficial. Everyone was playing around with ChatGPT. All the CEOs were realizing, oh, this can write just as much of a meaningless speech as I can. This year, I think we're really going to hear from a lot of businesses. How are we trying to use this technology to change our business, and certainly all the supporting companies? You know, there's what happens in the Congress Center, but then the main street of Davos are these companies that have taken over stores, and every window is like, navigate AI, AI is the future, we'll help you. So I think it's a boom time for all the companies that are consultants around this stuff as well.
And what do you take away from the fact that the main road, the promenade, is filled with companies touting AI?
I mean, to me, this is the most real shift, the quickest shift, the most profound shift in all the years I've been covering tech. And it comes after a lot of years of buzz. There was a lot of buzz around crypto. There was a lot of buzz around metaverse. And I think there was some reticence to jump on this. Even, you know, I know with my colleagues and with myself, I was checking myself. Am I just buying into the hype? Because I didn't really think either of those were as transformative. I do think the metaverse may have another moment down the road, but it depends on hardware. And this is software technology, so it can advance much faster. And even at software scale, I'm blown away by how much the technology changes, not from last Davos, but over the course of a couple months. What's possible just changes dramatically.
I love having journalists on because you often come at things from a slightly more skeptical point of view than us more corporate folks. It's interesting for me to hear you look at AI as very different than recent innovations, but I can't help but juxtapose all of the AI along the promenade and the main road versus some of what you mentioned before, crypto and blockchain years before. Do you feel like the corporate involvement and marketing around AI actually adds to some of the hype and distrust, or is it useful in a different way?
I do think that the technology is very real. I do believe that, but I also believe that as powerful as this technology is, it's agnostic as to whether it's being used for good or bad. And I think the risks are very real and very present. And they're not so much the risks of the robots taking over. That may well be a risk at some point, but right now it's very significant things. It's misinformation. It is spreading wealth. It is spreading income inequality. It's bias. It's discrimination. And these things are very real and present today and need to be addressed.
So let's talk about addressing those risks in the context of the Edelman Trust Barometer, which we just published today. One of our findings is around the state of trust and innovations in society. And we looked at innovations including AI, but also GMO, mRNA, green technology. And we found that the majority of our respondents, by a 2-to-1 margin, feel that innovation is poorly managed versus well managed. When institutions mismanage innovation, people are more likely to reject those emerging technologies. What do you think responsible management of innovations in general looks like?
and this has been true and needed for a while, it's just more needed and more urgent because of AI, is the need for the companies that are developing these technologies to imagine all the ways they can be used, not just hope for the best, not just say the good outweighs the bad, but really design, imagining people are going to use these in harmful ways. And that responsibility belongs on the people that develop it. We certainly see that in other areas, but technology has largely been able to evade that through the power of what they do. And again, AI is more powerful than many of these other technologies. So we haven't learned these lessons well. We saw that with social media. I'm somewhat hopeful that people are looking to address AI sooner than they did with social media, but I'm not convinced we're not going to repeat the same mistakes.
When you say that the people responsible for creating the innovations are also meant to help safeguard them, are you saying that it's businesses' responsibility as the creator, or what's the role of government and other institutions?
I mean, the role of government and other institutions is to hold them accountable, but companies need to imagine in the design of these products all the ways they can be misused. Regulation can and should hold them to account for that, but we need to demand and expect more of these companies that are developing it. Not to use hope, not to use good outweighing bad. Brad Smith wrote this in his book, Tools and Weapons, and AI is the most powerful tool and the most powerful weapon I've seen in my lifetime. It is incumbent on these companies not just to push and pray, but to really develop these with true safeguards and true understandings of the risks that we talked about.
Are there either companies or best practices that you're seeing companies put into place already?
There are. I mean, I think companies are doing some things that I think are smart, are good and effective. You know, we're seeing red teaming as a term that's come up a lot, which basically just means trying to break the safety protections that have put in place. And one of the things that I think is really challenging about these big generative AI systems, especially large language models like Google's Bard or OpenAI's GPT-4, is you have a very powerful model that's trained on all the world's knowledge, so to speak, and then you have this other veneer that's trying to make it safe. And there's a couple challenges with that. One, it can be broken, as we've seen a lot. It's, you know, sometimes just rewording a phrase or saying do it twice gets you a different result. But also, it's a very value-laden thing to say, here's all the world's knowledge, and here's the values. And so I think that creates a bunch of problems. One is, we don't agree on those values. We don't agree with them within the United States, a huge division clearly in our country over what our core values are. Certainly they're different, not just US and China, which we hear a lot about, but they're different within a few miles in the Middle East. You'll have vastly different takes on, for example, world politics if you look at Russia and Ukraine. So it's really tricky.
When we look at the adoption of AI and other innovations, people, according to the Trust Barometer, are more likely to accept AI when they believe the four following things. And some of this you've touched on, but I'd love to get deeper on some of the others. One is that it's effectively regulated. Two, that they believe it will lead to a better future. Three, that people like me will have control over how it affects their own lives. And lastly, that it was evaluated by scientists and ethicists. Maybe let's start with the last one because that ties back to your prior point. What do you think is the role of scientists and ethicists in the creation of AI?
Well, I love that ethicist was included in that question because scientists can be pretty broad. And obviously scientists should be involved. But this isn't just a science thing. You know, one of the other things that's happening because AI is so powerful is it's not limited to tech companies adopting it. This is changing everything. And it really gets beyond just scientists and ethicists. I would take it a step further and say it's who you have in the room. Who you have in the room when you're designing it, who you have in the room when you're building it, and that can be your own employees. It highlights the need for a diverse workplace, but it's also bringing in affected communities by these products and talking to as wide a range as possible. That's not something Silicon Valley is terribly good at. Their workforce is not diverse, we know that. And oftentimes, even when they try and bring people in, they bring in the head of this nonprofit or that nonprofit, which isn't necessarily reflective of the full range of concerns.
When you speak to leaders at companies that are developing AI, do you ask them who they had in the room during their creation? Do you ask them about the process? And how transparent do they tend to be?
I mean, the good thing is they have an answer. I would say if you asked 5 or 10 years ago, they might not have even had an answer. Transparent, I would say, I often hear we've talked with a lot of stakeholders. We've brought in focus groups. We're working with nonprofits, which in some ways, I mean, that's the right answer. You wouldn't want to hear they aren't doing those things. I mean, you still see problems that you just wouldn't see if they'd asked a woman when they were designing it, if they'd talked to a black person about what their experience is. You know they haven't had a good conversation because you see glaringly obvious flaws.
To that point, how do you get people like me involved in the process? What's your recommendation to companies?
I think it needs to be more than superficial. It needs to be more than an advisory council. It really needs to be first and foremost. Just like I firmly believe that companies need to imagine all the harms that their products can produce, you really need a diverse set of people advising at the earliest stages. And it really is why workplace diversity is important. We're having yet another moment where, again, in the United States, we're having this questioning of, you know, whether DEI is a good thing or a bad thing. And one of the reasons it's so business critical is these products impact different groups differently, and different people's lived experience will help you build better products. If you're developing some new glasses with an AI capability, you know, and you ask a woman who's walked down a dark street at night, it's going to feel really differently than a guy who's never feared while walking down the street. And those things are subtle, and they're not always obvious. But what is obvious is you won't get it. The more homogeneity you have, the more likely you're going to miss those things. And I've seen a lot of tech products over the years that totally missed the mark because of that.
And thinking about DEI as a topic, right now, in some ways, the question is, are U.S. businesses backing away from DEI, or are they backing away of talking about it or talking about it as D&I? What's your take?
I think, unfortunately, it's both. I mean, they're certainly going to find new synonyms for that just to avoid criticism, as probably they should. But I think it's a terrible thing for our society that diversity has become a bad thing, that diversity is still being defined in opposition to merit and quality. And that's not the case. Diversity is good business. It's good business. You understand your customers better. You build better products. A great example of this is accessibility. And you can think of accessibility as a nice thing to do. You can think of it as a good, but it turns out in technology, you get great products when you build for accessibility. And let me give a couple examples. For example, the classic example that's not technology is a sidewalk ramp. You build it so that somebody with a wheelchair can access the sidewalk. It also helps a mom pushing a stroller. It helps somebody who's struggling with mobility. There's all these ancillary benefits, and we've seen that so many times in technology. It turns out that doing captions for the blind for photographs, which was designed for the blind, probably a pretty small segment, still super important to do just on its own merits. But it turns out that was amazing training data to teach systems to recognize what was happening in a photo. There's a great example of where it's not a feel-good thing. It is valuable just for that. And if that were the only benefit, companies still should make their products accessible. But it turns out there's all these other benefits.
So thinking about diversity in all of its forms, earlier on, I almost inferred that you thought Silicon Valley still remains behind much of the rest of the corporate world in terms of having diverse and inclusive workforces and diverse and inclusive leaders and experts that they bring in to make decisions. Do you think that is the case now?
I think they probably bring in a more diverse set, certainly than they used to. I don't know how it compares with, say, consumer packaged goods. I don't know if when M&Ms are deciding whether blue or green should be the color to go, they bring in a diverse set of people. I also know the consequences aren't terribly high. What is indisputably true is they come from a lower place. Those other industries are more diverse. The tech industry, by any metric, is still tremendously undiverse. It's predominantly male, it's predominantly white, and certain Asian populations. There are still very few Black and Latino leaders in tech, as well as employees, still too few women in tech. And so, again, when you're building these powerful products, we all need to understand we're coming at this from a deficit.
You've been covering the tech industry for a long time in Silicon Valley for a long time. Has any progress been made?
I think it would be unfair to all the hard work that a lot of people have done to say there hasn't been progress. But I think it's important to say that progress is only in certain dimensions. I don't think we've seen a fundamental change in the true representation of Black and Latino folks in tech. I think, you know, there may be small gains, but they're off such a small base that I don't feel like that opportunity really exists. And where I also think it's important to note some criticism is it's not just a pipeline problem. That was talked about for a long time. Oh, there's just not enough people. Our culture is still bro culture. It's still very white male dominated. And until we recognize and accept that, we're not going to have a more diverse thing. That said, we've seen companies be more successful than others. And, you know, there are some best practices. We've seen companies that, you know, have programs that help people at each stage. So there are some companies that are doing comparatively better. The industry understands it has a problem, and I know from other types of social sciences that recognizing you have a problem can be the first step, but we've been stuck at that step for a long time.
Yeah, it's great to hear your historical and strong perspective on that. One of the whole ethos of Davos is the idea of business mixing with other institutions, and particularly with business leaders. And as I mentioned earlier, people want business to be more involved and regulating new technologies, including AI. But most people also think that government regulators lack adequate understanding of emerging technologies to even effectively regulate them. First off, do you agree with that finding? And then B, what do you make of that finding?
I do think it's true, but I do want to give some credit here. I think that regulators, because AI is so powerful, have taken proactive steps to educate themselves in ways that we didn't see with other technologies. Now, AI is changing so fast, they're up against it, as we all are. But I give credit to, you know, whether it's Congress or the executive branch or whomever, of really recognizing this and saying we need to educate ourselves. So I definitely think this is a better process than we've seen before. I don't think you could say, oh, Washington, D.C. fully grasps AI, but they're definitely making a much bigger effort.
What have you observed that makes you come to that conclusion?
I mean, some of it is just having these meetings and having them be longer, having them be behind closed doors. One thing I've learned about D.C., I'm still kind of a newbie to figuring out how it works, but hearings are useless when it comes to understanding. They're not designed for that. They're more speeches than they are testimony. They're a chance to reiterate your talking points and your preconceived notions. So I'm glad they're behind closed doors, which as a reporter in general, I don't like meetings that I'm not invited to. But in this case, I'm like, good, spend 3 hours behind closed doors asking the questions you have. That's a very healthy step.
Can I ask a question, though, about the behind closed doorness of it all? Our respondents say they want to see business and government partnering together. By more than 10 points compared to a decade ago, they say they want business and government to partner on innovation. If they're doing it behind closed doors and all they see are the more theatrical hearings, how do they then see these two institutions actually partnering?
Well, and I want to throw one more thing in the mix. One is what happens visibly and one is behind closed doors. The other tricky thing is, and this is reflected in other questions in the survey, people want government to be regulating tech, and it is very hard to be regulating these companies at the same time you're trying to figure out how can we work together. I think we actually want both, but I have to hold and recognize that's a tough ask of either. And so I think we're going to have to settle for imperfect regulation and imperfect cooperation if we want them to try and do both at the same time.
That's a great nuance. Let's talk quickly about the role of the media. What do you think is the role of media in terms of educating, whether it be government officials, consumers who are deciding whether or not to adopt or resist a technology? What's the role of media?
I mean, our role is, in some sense, hasn't changed. The dynamics and the profitability of it have changed a tremendous amount, the tools we use. But our job is to illuminate what the power structures are, what's happening, who's behind it, why it matters. And when a technology is changing as rapidly as AI, that's a tall order. I mean, for me as a reporter, it's tremendously exciting. Like, I am, as you probably can tell, pretty jazzed about all this. I love playing around with the technology. I'm writing these prompt reviews for my newsletter where I'm just going hands-on. And I'm trying to do it not just say, how is this thing? How does it work? Should I give it 3 stars or 4? But really say, here's this thing. Here's why I was interested. Here's where it's going next. Here's the tough question that raises.
Your enthusiasm for the technology is infectious. I love when you play around with a new technology. One of the other things that I know you're enthusiastic about is how you and I have gotten to know each other better here at Davos is around LGBTQ rights globally and at Davos. Why is it important to have conversations about LGBTQ rights at Davos?
It's important for the same reason I'm encouraged to see this year for the first time. I think there's an indigenous contingent. The Hispanic contingent has been very large and important for quite a while. This is a unique place and opportunity. And for all the criticism that Davos sometimes gets, it is tremendously important that you have tons of business leaders, tons of heads of state and top government officials in one place. It is one of the few times right now, especially in our fractured world, that you have people that don't always agree on values, on these really tough things, together in one place. And I think it is really important to have these conversations, and visibility is important. You know, it was only last year was the first time that there was a dinner inside the forum for attendees who identify as LGBTQ. And it was an amazing event. I was lucky enough to be there and to see these different perspectives, youth combined with people that had come out at the very later stages of their career, differences around the world. You know, it's very different still if you're in Brazil or you're in China or you're in the United States. And I think it's also important because you have a lot of different cultures. You know, if you walk along the promenade, Accenture started this thing last year where companies and all the businesses and governments that have locations could turn on rainbow lights. And one of the things that's so powerful about that is you might have a house that's turned on its lights right next door to a country where there are still tremendous penalties for openly living your life. So I think it's enormously important because of what Davos is.
Yeah, and we talked about that main street, the promenade being lit up by AI. It's wonderful to hear it being lit up by LGBTQ rights through the rainbow light up as well.
And I will say one more thing. While I'm enormously excited to see that, and it feels good to see that, and I think it sends an important message to those countries and places that aren't, I will push the companies that are turning on those rainbow lights that we need so much more between Davoses from those companies. Their employees, even in the United States, are at increasing risk. I wish I could come here and say, in that last year, it's been a safer world. Instead, there are more and more states where I'm at risk of losing my job, my health care, my basic civil rights, where these tremendously brave LGBTQ youth who know themselves in a younger and younger age are at the risk of being forcibly discriminated against under penalty of law. We need those companies to step up. And you know, you've heard me say this both publicly and privately, rainbow lights are great, but we really need those companies to lead with values. And if I can say one more thing, one of the really unfortunate things that's happened is we've seen a bunch of examples where companies have gotten a huge backlash for openly supporting LGBTQ issues. And I think companies have taken the wrong message away from that. I think a lot of companies have been like, it's bad for business, it's not safe. And if you dive into some of those specific examples, what you actually find is the company waffled. The companies that from the get-go did their thing, said LGBTQ people are important just like everyone else is important, not more important, not specially important, but important, and stuck with that aren't the ones that have gotten the backlash. So companies need to figure out, where do you stand? If you stand for this group of people, if you're willing to flip on the lights, you have to be committed. You're gonna face some backlash, but if you say, sorry, we stand for everyone, you're gonna be much better off than if you buckle at the first sight, then they see you as an opportunity. And I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Yeah, and you're not gonna build trust with this community if you're only doing it during Davos and not doing it the other 51 weeks of the year. Ina, that's all we have time for. Thank you for your passion and expertise. If people want to keep hearing from you, where should they subscribe?
You can sign up for our free AI newsletter at AI Plus, the word plus, so aiplus.axios.com.
And we'll put that in our show notes as well. To our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.